Welcome to the King's Road Podcast. I am your host, Justin Yance, the Aries Justin Yance. And I have a special guest with me for this interview. This is part one of my interview with Xenia. She also has a show on YouTube called Xenia Did That. She is a blogger, a YouTuber, a wrestling journalist, and enjoy. Okay, I am here with Xenia from YouTube and as well as Instagram. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. This is great. So you just went to WrestleMania 38, or as they say now, just WrestleMania.
Just WrestleMania.
Like they don't want to say the numbers anymore. It's just WrestleMania. It's kind of weird. So how was that?
It was a blast. It was a lot. Honestly, when people ask me like, oh, did you have fun? I'm like, yeah, it was a lot. It was funny because even during the week, you run into a friend or wrestler, you know, and you're like, oh, this is so cool, right? And everyone's like, yeah, because there was just so much going on. I went to WrestleMania both nights. I went to the Collective. I tried to go to like every Collective show, which obviously didn't work. It was a losing game from the start. I went to No Peace. I went to WrestleCon. I recorded some interviews. It was great.
Wow. That's cool. Do you have a favorite night of WrestleMania? Which was your
Definitely night one. Absolutely. Yeah, even really. After I was exiting the building after night one, I told my friend, I was like, there's no way night two is going to measure up to this. No. You know, maybe it's my personal thing because honestly, when I got there, I was kind of overwhelmed because it's been a while since I went to a larger show like this. Last time I've been to a stadium show like that was SummerSlam last summer. But I was kind of overwhelmed and my seats weren't that great, not to complain, but you know, I couldn't really see much from there. And I was like, oh, is this even fun? And then Miz gets the pin and I'm like, yeah, this is fun. And that's when I started having fun. And then Cody Rhodes showed up. I popped very hard for Cody Rhodes. I screamed so hard, I gave myself a headache. So there was no way night two could.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Cody Rhodes. I thought that was
let's talk about Cody Rhodes.
An amazing way to introduce him. I mean, the fact that they were able to get his AEW music and play that, like a lot of people thought like they were going to play like the dashing Cody Rhodes music. I'm like, that
which would
really,
be cool too, honestly.
It really wouldn't have fit that moment, you know, him with all the fireworks. He's coming out to like a song that just has like two verses.
Yeah, that was awesome. Honestly, it's great that he got to keep his whole entire presentation. And I'm also friends with Don't State, the band who made the song, and I've known them for years, and it's an amazing moment for them too. The song is trending. They're, I think, currently at number two rock songs in the US on iTunes, which is amazing for them.
I remember them because they've had their songs on like WWE pay-per-views before. So it's interesting. Yeah. Now they came in with Cody and everybody is just like listening to that song. Like that's all I could hear. Like the whole weekend was just like,
and all the memes
song.
Too.
In my mouth. Yeah. I just thought that was like the best way to bring him in, because they gave him the superstar entrance, like when they first did the fireworks, and then you're like, what is that? And then the lights go down and we still don't know yet, and then it's like, and then you hear those first chords, his voice going, and you're like, oh my god, it's him. I was in
the elevator, the
I know. I was in Richmond. I was doing something. So I had to go and see it at like a movie theater. And I was like with like one other person there. And I just like screamed so loud when he came out. And that, like everybody's like, the guy's like, well, what's the big deal? I'm like, it's Cody Rhodes.
It is the big deal. It's Cody Rhodes.
It was amazing. And I love how Seth's like expression like was like all happy. And then he just like changed like into just like, I hate you. How dare you ruin my moment.
Before that happened, and again, I would just want to reiterate that I'm a huge Cody fan and I've been since Legacy. Like, it's not new. I'm not one of those people who are suddenly excited about Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
But before that happened, I was even saying that, oh, like, I'm not sure if he's big enough of a star for a mainstream viewer to get a pop at WrestleMania. And now I feel like an idiot for saying that, because it was one hell of a pop.
That was the pop of the night, other than Austin. Yeah. I mean, what else? I mean, that was just, it was amazing. I get goosebumps just like still thinking about it. It was just like, that was the perfect way to do it. Please don't screw him up. Let this lead to either SummerSlam, him winning the title, or him going to WrestleMania. I think like that's the perfect story. I know they like this Gable Steveson guy, but I'm like, from what I've seen of him, I'm like, yeah.
And I got so excited for Cody, and it felt like a celebration. It really felt like a WrestleMania moment, which, I mean, it was. But then in my head, I was like, I like stopped for a second, and I was like, why am I excited? I'm more of an AEW fan. I don't even watch WWE that much. Why am I so happy about this? But I guess I'm just happy because he's happy, because it's what he wanted, and because he finally gets his big moment, his big push, his big presence, which he deserves. And if that's what he wants, then cool, we'll just be happy about it.
And I think also that was really cool is it was almost as if the AEW character just walked onto WWE's channel, you know. It was similar to, I could only think of, like, you know, Scott Hall and Nash when they came on to WCW. It had that kind of feel to it of like, here they just like are showing right up. It's not it's not this reinvented Cody. It's the Cody we've been watching in New Japan and then NWA and all over the place. And like, here he is now. And it's like, we're not going to change him. We're not going to change his music. We're gonna, like, this is him. So yeah.
I went to Cody's panel / Q&A after the second night of WrestleMania. And I actually ditched WrestleMania early for that. I left right before the main event. And it was funny. Like, if you guys follow me on Twitter, you saw that, like, talking about the memes that me and Tara Tartasic were there, and we were tweeting like adrenaline, and we started the line for Cody Rhodes. We're literally the first in line to that Q&A. And he talked about him keeping his presentation, and he said that it was very important to him, and that it was like the main thing that he needed from WWE to exist in this agreement. And he also said that Mr. McMahon proposed to change up the logo. And Cody was like,
No, don't.
It's right here. You can't change.
Please don't. I'm glad he fought him on that. That would have been so stupid. Like, it's a perfect logo. I mean, he put it on his neck, you know.
But that's what he was saying. Like, it's on him forever. There's no other logo. This is the logo. Yeah.
what do you like? Because before that, you know, he was starting to get, you know, the mixed reactions from AEW. I think he'll be kind of protected in WWE from that, because I don't know. Why do you think that happened? Why do you think that, like, there was this like change to him?
It's interesting because we as viewers almost thought, and as analytics too, almost thought that it was happening because he wanted it to happen. Like, it was being done on purpose. Again, judging by the panel, it looks like it wasn't, because he himself doesn't really know why that happened. No. When I was watching it, especially like still in the pandemic era, right? That's when that started happening, because a lot of people say that it happened after the Ogogo promo, which was terrible. And then Cody himself thinks so. But the truth is, he was getting booed before that. Like, that wasn't any breaking moment. I mean, it sure exacerbated it, but it wasn't the start of it.
I think it started with like the Darby stuff, like when he started when he started feuding with him. But it just seemed like it just kept going. It reminded me so much of John Cena, where it was like, you know, he's fighting it and he doesn't want to go with it. Yeah. But I think what he's done now is, since he's taken like a little bit, it's been, you know, a couple of months. Now here he is in, you know, WWE, like people are ready to go with him now.
Yeah. And when I was watching it, my thought process was, it's either that, again, he's doing it on purpose and he's very intricately working us, or him having to perform throughout the pandemic and going into the pandemic era as literally the biggest natural babyface in wrestling, and I stand by that. That's the hill that I will die on. At one point, he was the biggest natural babyface
in wrestling. In AEW, that match with Dustin Rhodes was like, I was like, this is the guy, and then he put that stupid stipulation.
Going into the pandemic era like that, and kind of losing that direct contact with the crowd and losing that direct contact with the audience, he might have just gotten in his head about it. It is very much a John Cena moment where someone is so used to being the babyface and someone is so used to being this redeemable, perfect person that when they lose this connect with the crowd, the crowd stops perceiving it as authentic. The crowd starts to feel like, oh, so you now believe that you're this perfect good guy and no one can touch you, and we don't like that. I feel like there's this breaking moment in almost any face character if you take it too far. It's almost like you stop being the good guy that crowd loves and you start being the guy who thinks he's the good guy that the crowd loves.
Yeah, it reminded me, I thought he was going to, because his jacket looked like Homelander's jacket from The Boys. And I was like, oh, that's where he's like going. Like in his mind, he's a hero, but to everyone else, he's horrible. You know, like I thought that would have been, you know, an interesting thing. But then I realized like, no, he really doesn't want to be a heel in any way, shape, or form. And he would
told this, like, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you go.
He even told this like little story at the panel that he usually after AEW shows, he would do like rounds and take selfies with people. And he recalled this one woman taking selfie with him and going like, hey, sorry for booing you, but it's just because you're gonna turn heel, right? And he was like, what? Like literally some people who were booing him thought they were doing the right thing. It's just because we're so used to WWE's system of adopting heels like that, where we're almost expected to like figure out who we are supposed to boo. And I feel like in AEW, it's always been very different. And the EVPs have talked about it too, where it's like, there's no heels or faces in the traditional sense. The crowd decides who they like and who they dislike. And I feel like we almost got caught in this WWE style trap of where like we were watching Cody and we're like, oh, I guess we're supposed to hate him.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I was at the Miami show, the Rampage, where Andrade and Pac back had the battle, and then he just showed up. And, you know, the fans kind of like forgot about booing him for a minute, but then all of a sudden you started hearing the boos. And yeah, he would walk around the thing and he cut the promo saying, this is why I'll never turn heel.
Hearing something right now, it's because there's a thunderstorm starting.
Oh, that's okay. You're in Florida. I've been in Florida many times, so I know what did you think of the Austin Owens match?
I thought it was great, like for the state of Austin's health.
Yeah, he can't really bump or do anything. That was like the thing that was kind of obvious. This was like, okay, he can take maybe a couple of bumps, but like when he's walking down the ramp, you could like kind of see him limping a little bit. Now it's like, oh wow.
I really didn't expect him to bump at all. But yeah, he did.
And he did.
And it was a huge moment, I feel, both for Kevin, of course, and for him, because you know, we never want the superstars that we loved in the good old days to come back and be very visibly
older.
You know, old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like it was great. Like, it didn't give an impression of like, oh, this poor old guy is, you know, struggling to do this. It was great. It was fun. It was engaging. I liked it.
And I hope they do something with this, with Owens. Like, they see how good he is, that he was able to have that match, and like he's not just, because I feel like sometimes he's just like swimming around there, and I'm like, there's so much. Like, I remember him in ROH as Kevin Steen, and he was so, you know, charismatic, and like, it's like, where's he, you know, please do something with him.
Honestly, I feel like Owens has become at this point one of those guys that we just trust unconditionally. I feel like that's Ziggler, Miz, Kofi Kingston, and now Kevin Owens, to where they don't have to be champions all the time. They don't have to be at the top of the card all the time, but WWE just gives them more creative freedom than they do other people, and they trust them to take it and run with it and be great. And yeah. I feel like Owens deserves this, and I feel like it was, you know, probably one of the bigger moments of his career, and it was the biggest moment of his career.
I mean, being
yeah,
in there with
yeah, sure. Let's toss
being you know, in there with the Austin. I mean, when they were sitting there and they like were like, oh wow, he's actually going to do a. This is how they're going to get to a match, because at first, mm-hmm. like when we heard that it's the KO show, I was like, oh okay, it's gonna be like Carlito and you know WrestleMania 21. We're like. He's just going to stun somebody and then leave. And it's like, oh no, there he's actually going to, you know, like I knew there was probably going to be a brawl, but then he's like, I want a match with you. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is like, we were already like 11:30 and it was like,
really gave us what we wanted. It's so rare that WWE actually says, okay, here gives us something that we actually want, and that happened across the board.
That's what was so great about this Mania, is it was like, okay, here's the things you want, we're gonna actually give you some of them, you know. And I thought the Becky Bianca Belair match that's probably one of her best matches since coming back. Was she's just like I was like, oh wow, she's just like, that was such an inflow match. The Charlotte Ronda match, kind of, I don't know, they lost a step there. I just was kind of like, it was good, but it wasn't like, I don't know, I don't like the bullshit finish where, like, you know, it's like, oh no, he tapped out, no, but the ref didn't see it, and it's like, oh, come on.
It's a little tired at this point.
Yeah,
and with Bianca, I'm so glad that she got her moment and that she, it finally came full circle, because when the SummerSlam thing happened.
Just got killed in 3 seconds.
Just got killed, murdered. Everyone was so mad, including me, including Nikki Bella. Like, no one was happy with that. And I hate to be, you know, one of those people, but I guess we did let it play out. And I guess it did play out.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, was that the final plan, or was this something that they kind of just lucked into with the, like Bryan Danielson, when he finally, you know, when they're like, oh, that was the, it's like, no, it wasn't. You
Someone
wanted him
was
to
saying
face
that the Miz's match was apparently like a botched finish that they like, they weren't supposed to win. And
really?
I don't know about that. It felt right to me.
I heard that Logan Paul insisted that he, you know, get turned face at the end of it, and I'm like, why? Everybody hates
him. I think in this situation, I almost feel like the person who turned face was the Miz, and not
yeah, like the yeah, he got a pop Paul. When he hit him. It's like, yes, get him. Like,
Logan Paul is just so universally hated, and honestly, for a reason. Like, it's not just blind hate, but he was great though, right? He was great in the match.
No, he was, he was really good in the match.
I did get some heat from people that I know for saying that Dominic Mysterio is not very good.
Really?
But he's not very good.
No, well, he's just kind of bland in the like, I'm just kind of like, is he going to just be Dominic's son for the rest of it? Like, how are we supposed to like take this? Seriously.
I don't like him being the son, because for Lucha, it's a very traditional thing. You're kind of stuck in your father's heritage, and it's really not his fault. And I don't feel like it's a bad thing, but it's just that he's just not very good in the ring. Like, he's not very smooth.
But they present him as so like just bland.
WWE is probably the only company in the world where they could get away with this, where they could get away with this presentation of his. And it's just twice as baffling and twice as confusing, where you see a non-wrestler in the match who is almost more
who's
Chris.
Almost better. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I wanted to see him.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be a terrible person. I'm just saying, maybe don't force this spotlight on him. Maybe take him to the performance center.
Put him in NXT and let him develop some kind of personality on his own.
Yeah.
Paying tribute to his father, as opposed to just kind of being his father's sidekick.
As opposed to just kind of bring your kid to work type of thing.
There you go. Bring your kid to work day. Except it's been like bring your kid to work day for a whole 2 years.
bring your kid to work year as opposed to bring your kid to work day. Yeah.
That's
so terrible. I'm so sorry.
Honestly,
I feel bad because I, even when I tweeted it and like I got some negative reactions, I said that I barely ever talk negatively about wrestlers, like ever. Yeah. It's one thing to talk negatively when like they said something sexist or they're being accused of, you know, assault. There's another thing. But when it comes to skills, I rarely ever say anything. Because I feel like my analytics lie more in the realm of storylines and more in the realm of psychology, more in the realm of, you know, all that than in ring, because I don't feel like, first of all, I don't feel like that's something that I'm interested in as much as I'm interested in wrestling as a performance, as a storyline, as a story period. But also I don't feel like I'm qualified enough to talk on that. I've never taken a bump, I'm not going to be out there criticizing people for like, oh, your dropkick sucks. Like, I'm not this kind of person. But sometimes someone is just so blatantly green that
you unless you're saying Okada's dropkick sucks, then there you have route. Yeah, like. Okay. What did you think of night two?
It was fun. I'm not complaining. Like, literally, I had a lot of fun at WrestleMania, and I do feel like it was one of the better WrestleManias in the recent years. I mean, again, especially night one, but night two, it just didn't feel as big almost, you know, because like the event that was presented as the biggest, how were they saying the most?
The most stupendous show ever. Yeah.
The most stupendous match and the most stupendous show was supposed to be Reigns and Lesnar, right?
And they just had a match. We've seen the match.
I left right before that match too. Like
I wasn't going.
The thing is, I respect both of them immensely, and I think they're great performers in their own right. But we weren't expecting like a 5-star Tokyo Dome Classic out of this match, right?
What I thought would have been cool is if to beat Brock Lesnar, like he just like had to like just. Like just spear him over and over again, and they did like something where like maybe he's like coughing up blood or something, and I think it would have been cool if like Roman had to like just kill Brock Lesnar, like similar to what Cena did to Umaga, where like he had to just like basically almost kill him.
Honestly, I'm kind of over Brock Lesnar being this like unkillable monster that no one can beat. I feel like it's fair to present Roman as equal to him as opposed to him struggling so hard to beat this monster, because like literally I'm so again, nothing against Brock Lesnar personally. I think he's great and I've heard of him being a wonderful person. But I'm just so tired of him being booked as this like one immovable object in WWE. Like, why? Because the guy went to UFC. I mean, there's a lot of people on the roster who did MMA. Bobby Lashley did MMA. And no one needs to spear him 27 times to beat him.
But I mean, but the fact that they built this up as like the two monsters coming up, like King Kong versus Godzilla, was like, that's it. It was just like, it was just a regular match. It was just regular Brock Lesnar match. Like
things.
They kept saying blood for blood. You know, he kept saying that. There's no blood. There's no blood whatsoever. That's why I love what Danielson said to Vince. I just want to bleed. You know, and he's like, well, Mr. I can't help you that, pal.
I cannot do that for you. I mean, Cody didn't bleed, but they went hard. And Cody was like, he wasn't busted open, but he had like a hematoma on his forehead the next day. It was pretty bad.
I did see that. Yeah.
Instead of the main event. So I looked at Cody instead.
Shows how important Lesnar versus. See, the only thing that I think would have saved it is if at the end they redid the SummerSlam thing, but instead it was The Rock coming out and confronting Roman and that them setting cool. that up.
Yeah.
But we didn't get that. It was just, he beat him, and then it was like, okay. My problem is, after he's beaten Brock, it's like, who is there?
Who's next?
Who's Cody. Who's left for him? Yeah, Cody.
literally Cody. It all makes sense.
But I'm like, are we going to have to witness a whole year of like him just killing everybody again, where it's just like none of the matches mean anything? You're just like, well, there's not losing here.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Cody is like doing the ratings. Like, I'm pretty sure that's like legit, yeah, and that's happening, because literally people were watching Raw building up to WrestleMania just because they thought he was going to show up. I actually went to Raw in Jacksonville, and up until the last minute of TV, there was hope that he will show up.
Yeah, and then there was nothing. They did that.
Yeah, that's such a scam. I guess.
I remember watching that. It's like, really? This is it. Although I'm glad they saved it, because what they did with Cody was great.
But like, there's one way to keep people on their toes. And maybe we have another year ahead of us of like, when is he going to confront Roman? Is it going to be this week? Is it going to be next week? Honestly, I am motivated to watch Raw now, because I want to see Cody. Like, he is a draw, and I hope that we realize that, and I hope they don't forget about that.
I just hope they don't do the thing like, now Seth has to get his win back, and then it's like don't do that. Don't beat Cody. Just
he will
let him
do just fine without beating Cody. It's okay.
Let him build up and be something, you know.
I will say that I'm glad that Roman won. I didn't want Lesnar to win, but also again, I'm a little tired of this like never-ending cycle of unifying and separating titles. Like, are we ever going to stop? Probably not. Honestly, as a PR professional, like, I have a higher education in PR. It's a very common thing where there's this thing called corporate dysfunctions, and those are just like some like hiccups that happen in every large corporation, and this is literally one of those. But in like non-wrestling world, in the larger corporations, would manifest as dividing your, you know, departments into smaller departments, because it seems like it's going to be easier to manage, and hiring more managers, and you know, making the system, the structure, more complicated, and then putting them back together and merging them back together, because now it seems like that's harder to control, and that never-ending cycle just going and going. In wrestling, it's the same thing, but with unifying titles and separating titles, unifying rosters and separating rosters.
We'll merge the two divisions, and then it's like, now we're going to separate the two divisions. It's like, we don't know what we're going to do.
I know that that's like a very easy, simple way to, you know, give it a new flair and be like, oh, cool, or you find the title now, it's exciting. But like, maybe don't do it that often. I don't know, they've
done it so much, and it's like when they say this is the only time Raw and SmackDown characters are gonna face, and it's like, except for the other two.
And then the wild card rule that made zero sense, and that was getting broken every single week. And I mean, again, I get it, like, from the business standpoint, I know that like the TV contract is the reason, because the network didn't want them to separate the rosters to start with. So they wanted both superstars from both rosters to get featured on both shows. I get that, but it's just the way that they're trying to like squeeze it into this frame is not.
My problem is, you know, I don't mind Roman having a long reign, but they've made everybody so like beneath him. That there's like no, like, other than the Cody match, like, does anybody actually believe that if he faces Drew McIntyre that like he might win? Like, no.
Honestly, with McIntyre, it's like a whole different grudge that they have with WWE, because I love Drew McIntyre. I think he's great.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think my love to him stemmed from my love to Jinder Mahal, because I'm a huge Jinder Mahal fan.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I
like
know
the only
prayer.
Person that enjoyed that run. I was like,
I know at least two other people, shout out friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a huge Jinder Mahal fan, and I loved his championship run. And I think my love to him just kind of rubbed off onto Drew, because they were in 3&B together. But I love Drew McIntyre. And thing is, when he first came back, everyone was so happy. And again, it's so cool that he gets this huge comeback. He's a huge star now. He's repackaged in the most perfect way possible. But then somehow again, with the way WWE books their baby faces, he has become, again, not as a wrestler, not as a performer, but as a character, so unbearably boring. Like, I cannot bear to watch him right now. Like, it's so not compelling.
He's coming out with a sword.
So fake. I hate the sword. I hate the sword so much. I'm the number one sword hater. I despise it. I think it's stupid. At least I'm glad at WrestleMania, the sword cut something for once. This one time.
Yeah, that looks so lame, though.
It looked very lame, and the sound effect was strange.
He didn't actually cut it. It looked like they made a sound effect and it fell.
Also, I went to SummerSlam and I went to the Superstore, and they were selling the inflatable rubber sword. And I guess they weren't like very structurally sound, so most of them were like kind of deflated and flaccid. So like in my SummerSlam vlog, there's like a frame of me just like standing with a sword and it's just like wobbling around. The sword is incredibly stupid. Like, I get it as a prop, but why are you in a wrestling ring in a sports entertainment company threatening people with a sword?
It's like the wagon thing that, you know, remember Dean Ambrose or John Moxley had to carry out to face Brock Lesnar? He had like a chainsaw and everything. It's like, he's not gonna use
like
that.
Why? Like, you're not gonna use it. Like, either use it, which, you know, again, don't kill anyone. There's so much cool wrestling going on nowadays, and like, I've seen in the span of a year I've seen Ellie Catch slice up Matthew Justice, and I've seen Akira stab Masha Slamovich with a knife in the back. And you think I'm gonna be scared just because you're threatening someone with a sword?
No, I can't do anything in that in WWE. It's just gonna be like, it's just a prop. He comes out there and is like, don't the opponents know now? That's like, well, he's not gonna use it.
And again, if he were to just keep it as a prop, it would work perfectly fine. And when he would do his entrances and like stick it into the ramp, that was cool. I like that.
Yeah, but leave it there. Don't walk down to the ring with a stupid sword. Just leave it in the thing, you know, in the entrance.
Yeah. And I hate how he's so desperately keeping kayfabe with the sword too. Like, it's ridiculous. Because we went to this panel at the Superstore last weekend. It was him, Finn, and Shinsuke Nakamura. And they were just, you know, they were answering questions. And it was somewhere like on the brink of kayfabe. And again, people shit on WWE for a lot of things, but I feel like WWE does really good with keeping this like balance, like somewhere in between kayfabe and truth. So like a lot of the questions were, you know, pretty real. Like they asked like, oh, like what move hurts the worst to take, you know? Or like they asked Nakamura how his schedule is different in WWE from what he had in Japan. And he very honestly answered that here he has to drive himself to venues and he doesn't like it. So like, it was pretty, you know, pretty real at times. Mm-hmm. And someone asked him like, how heavy is a sword? And he literally went like full kayfabe. He was like, it's very heavy. You guys saw what it did to the ropes yesterday. That's real. Like that, it's very sharp, you know? Like, please, come on.
I mean, he may be actually telling the truth there. It is a long sword, and it could be.
I mean, I'm sure it is heavy, but like
sharp. No, I don't think it's sharp. If it was sharp, then you know, you could actually hurt somebody with it, you know. Be like, I mean, unfortunately for Drew, he won the title in an empty building, and that's what everyone's going to remember him as, the guy that won the belt in an empty building where he should have, you know, he was scheduled to beat Brock Lesnar in front of, you know, all those fans in Tampa.
70,000 people.
And he is said, hey, you're going to beat him in a warehouse. And they let him, he beat everybody. And then it was like, he started coming across Bobby Lashley. And then it was like, he gets beat by The Miz.
But I will say that winning the main title in a warehouse is better than not winning the main title. And he really carried the shows for a while during the pandemic era, and he did an amazing job. And it's such a special run too. Like, I don't think it's necessarily bad. It's just very special, and it's very peculiar on the backdrop of, you know, WWE history. And it's something that's gonna be remembered just for that too. And again, as a Miz super fan, I am not mad that he lost to The Miz.
You're not mad.
Great moment, honestly, for me. I popped so hard. That was
on that baby.
And I was at home watching in Russia at the time at like 5 a.m. Because of the time difference. And I literally like jumped up from my couch and screamed because literally it was maybe the first time in over 5 years for sure that something happened in WWE that I was so
the thing I hated about it though was like he had cashed it and then they gave it back to him and they did all this stupid stuff leading up to it, and it was just like, if you're gonna have him win, just let him win at the
but also it's the Miz, and like there's no way he could like visibly pin Drew McIntyre clean, so you know.
No I'm cool with how he did it. It's just like the storyline leading up to it was just like they just gave him back the briefcase for like no reason, and it was like, oh yeah, remember he stole it from Otis never like River Otis had the thing, and he's like, and then they just took it off him and they gave it to the Miz, and then the Miz lost it.
But the briefcase was better off with the Miz.
Otis was not the right character for that. It's like,
because when Otis won the briefcase, everyone, including me, well, everyone is a loud word, a lot of people thought that he might cash it on the tag titles. And that would be, you know, that would be kind of cool. I mean, on the one hand, the briefcase is like a lift for a wrestler to get their hands on the main title. But in the recent years, it really has not been like that. Like, I miss the times when it was that chance and it was the change.
For a while there, it was like the Intercontinental title. It was the thing you said that was like, okay, this is the stepping stone to the next rung. And instead, it's kind of become like, well, when is it?
But also when Otis won it, it was kind of exciting. He was kind of over and he was fun and people weren't too mad about it. And if he were to cash it on the tag titles, it would be an interesting precedent. And also it would make sense. But instead they just
like carried it around completely. For like forever. Okay. I want to thank Zenya for doing my interview. That is part one. Part two will be up next week. As I said, she's a blogger and a wrestling journalist. You can find her at her YouTube page. Zenya did that. And so stay tuned for part two. And remember, the truth shall set you free.